Well, get on with it, Holt said unapologetically, and Will, taking a deep breath, continued. I'll teach you to whistle. It's easy, you know. Just purse your lips in a kiss and blow. He nodded to Maddie to join in on the chorus. She did so with considerable energy. Whistle high and whistle low. It's easy to whistle once you know. Whistle high and whistle low. Just purse your lips and blow and blow. Will hit a final chord and the song came to an end. Maddie looked at the audience expectantly. Well, what do you think? She said. Nobody spoke for a moment. Then Gillan said softly, Good grief.
9. Will gestured to the door leading to the anteroom outside Gillan's office.
Maddie, perhaps you could step outside for a minute while we talk, he said. She shrugged and let herself out. Once she had gone, the others exchanged a look. Holt, whose own ear for music wasn't the strongest, frowned thoughtfully.
We take it that wasn't exactly good, he said.
Cassandra raised her eyebrows. She was a mother, and mothers never want to say anything negative about their children. Maybe she's got a little bit better than she used to be, she said tentatively. Horace gave a short bark of derision.
Do you think?
Cassandra reluctantly shook her head.
So, she's no good, Holt said.
It's not as if she doesn't try, Cassandra said. She's very enthusiastic. For which, read loud, Horace put in, and Cassandra gave him an angry glance.
Put it this way, Holt, Gillan said. Maddie couldn't carry a tune in a bucket.
She has what they call a cloth ear, Will added. We sometimes sing together after dinner in the evening. And I'll grant you she is enthusiastic, and loud, and totally off. She doesn't sing on the note. She doesn't even sing very near it. All right, Cassandra snapped. We've established that she's not the best of singers. Can we leave it at that, please?
Sorry, Will said, making a pretense of holding his hands up in self-defence.
Well, if she can't travel as a singer, what can she do?
Holt asked, sensing that this conversation was getting into dangerous waters. Again, there was a long silence in the room.
Maybe Malloy could help, Gillan finally suggested.
Malloy? Dad's jester? Cassandra asked.
He's a little more than that, Gillan told them.
Malloy's in charge of all entertainment at the castle. He hires entertainers for the king, and he's quite talented himself. He's a jester, of course, but he also dances and sings quite well. And he juggles, too. Maybe he'll have an idea about what she might do.
Will shrugged. It's worth a try.
Gillan rang the small bell on his desk that summoned Nickel.
The young apprentice opened the door and stepped in. Behind him, Maddie was looking expectantly at them.
Just a few more minutes, Maddie, said Gillan.
Then, addressing Nickel, he said, Nickel, can you fetch Malloy here, please? He reconsidered that statement. Nickel was 16. And 16-year-olds aren't renowned for their tact. Give him my compliments, and ask him if he could spare us a few minutes of his time, please, he amended.
Nickel was 16, and was imbued with all the ennui that a teenager can muster. He was an adept at eye-rolling and sighing. He did both, now.
Fetch Maddie, fetch the Ranger's mandola, fetch Malloy. The twin gestures seemed to say.
Yes, sir, he replied heavily, and withdrew once more.
He's a ray of sunshine, isn't he? Will said.
Gillan nodded.
It's no fun for him, being stuck here as an administrative assistant, he said. I'll have to get him some field experience soon.
Send him to me,
Will glowered. I'll give him field experience.
Gillen grinned. A few weeks with Will, and Nickel mightn't feel so put upon here at Araluen, he thought.
I might just do that, he said. He's a good kid at heart, but this job can get pretty boring.
Ah! Will snorted.
Cassandra smiled at him. When did you become a grumpy old man? She asked. Will jerked a thumb in Hort's direction.
About 5 minutes after I met him, he replied. He taught me everything I know.
Fortunately, said Hort, smiling, I didn't teach him everything I know.
Several minutes later, Nickel returned, tapping at the door and then entering.
Malloy the Jester is here, sir, he told Gillen.
Perhaps he had sensed Will's annoyance, because he was brisk and businesslike now, and his eyes stayed solidly in one plane.
Gillen smiled at him. Thanks, Nickel. Show him in, please. And send Maddie in as well.
The Jester was tall and lean, with an athletic build, slim hips and broad shoulders. He had prominent cheekbones and an aquiline nose. His hair was short-cropped, and he was clean-shaven. He wore a subdued version of the traditional jester's outfit. A red and green quartered jerkin and yellow hose, but without the extra tassels and bells and long pointed shoes. His short-cropped hair was beneath a felt cap, rather than the traditional headgear adorned with bells and baubles. He was well-muscled and moved gracefully. Studying him, Will felt Malloy was a physical match for any warrior he had ever seen, and he was right. Malloy, when necessary, could wield a sword with frightening speed and precision. Gillen made the introductions. Malloy, of course, knew Cassandra and Horace, and he recognised Maddie, although he maintained the popular protocol that she was merely an apprentice ranger, and not the second in line to the throne. Since Diamond's unsuccessful attempt at a coup, most of the senior palace staff knew about Maddie's dual identity, but it was tacitly agreed that they would not acknowledge it or discuss it. When she was dressed as a ranger, she was known as Maddie. When she appeared in court attire, she became Princess Madeline.
"We need your advice, Malloy," Gillen said. Will here is going on a mission, disguised as a jongler. He plays the mandola and sings.
Malloy nodded in Will's direction.
We've heard you're quite capable, sir, he said.
Will smiled. I get by.
Maddie will be going with them, Gillen continued. But we need to find her some sort of role as well.
I can sing with Will, can't I? Maddie interrupted, looking around the assembled faces. Nobody answered for a few seconds. Then Holt, with a tact he rarely exhibited, answered her.
You've got a nice voice, Maddie, but it's not really up to professional standards.
He was very fond of Maddie and didn't want to see her embarrassed. She looked a little crestfallen, but nodded her acceptance. If you say... But I'm willing to practice if you think that'd help.
Let's see what Malloy suggests, Hort told her.
He's the expert.
Malloy nodded briskly. In his years at the castle, he had heard Maddie sing from time to time. He stood in front of her now, sizing her up.
You look fit enough, he said. How about tumbling? Are you any good at that? That's something I could teach you relatively quickly.
He looked to Gillen.
I take it there's some urgency about this, he asked.
There usually was when rangers were involved, he knew.
Gillen replied, yes, we need to get her ready in a few weeks.
Will held up a hand before Malloy could go any further.
Tumbling and acrobatics might be a problem, he said. Maddie's certainly fit and has excellent balance and agility, but she was hit by a javelin some years ago, and her hip is a little stiff.
Does it cause you pain? Malloy asked.
She shrugged. Not generally. but when I get tired or exert myself a lot, it does stiffen up. She spread her hands apologetically. Sorry.
Not your fault, Malloy said.
I'll have Sana look at that. Sana? Who's that? Maddie asked.
She's one of my people. She's a triple threat. Juggler, tumbler, and knife thrower. I thought I'd get her to coach you.
Maybe she can teach you to juggle. Although, with this time frame, we wouldn't get past the basics. We'd need something else if people are going to believe you're a professional entertainer.
Maddie can throw a knife, said Gillen. And Malloy's interest was piqued.
Really? How well?
Maddie looked at Gillen questioningly. He indicated a portrait of one of Duncan's ancestors hanging on the wall behind his desk.
Show him, he said.
Maddie's hand went to the double scabbard on her left side. She drew back her arm in one smooth movement, then jerked it forward. Her throwing knife caught the light as it spun across the room, thudding to a halt exactly halfway between the eyes of the elderly knight in the portrait.
That well, said Malloy.
I think we could work with that. Great-uncle Hesperus is looking a little the worse for wear, said Cassandra. Gillen grinned.
Never liked that painting anyway.
10. The following morning, on Malloy's instructions, Maddie was waiting in the armory hall on the keep's second floor. She looked around as she waited. She hadn't been in this long, empty room since her mother's final practice duel with Diamond before the Red Fox Rebellion. The room was a vast space, well lit by tall windows that lined the southern wall. At one end, racks held practice arms and armour, wooden swords, axes and halberds, padded jerkins and leather helmets equipped with metal mesh-face protectors. There was a rack of steel swords for more realistic training. She noted the rounded points and blunted edges on the swords. Not too realistic, she thought. The floor was timber, well worn by the movement of thousands of feet over the years, as warriors practiced their skills with the various weapons in the racks. The floorboards were scarred and gashed, where over-enthusiastic strokes had missed their mark and damaged them. The gashes had been sanded and filled, but were still visible.
Good morning. I'm Sana. Malloy asked me to work with you.
Maddie turned at the voice. Sana was a young woman in her mid-twenties. She was petite but well-muscled and fit-looking. She pronounced her name as Sana. She had pleasant, regular features, and her shoulder-length, light brown hair curved down in a heavy wave on the right side of her face. She was dressed in a thigh-length jerkin, in a diamond pattern featuring the traditional jongler's colours, red, green, and yellow. Below the jerkin, she wore yellow hose and ankle-high red leather boots. Maddie noted that her shoes were not fashioned in the usual entertainer's style, with long, curved tips and bells. Then she recalled that Malloy had said Sana was a tumbler. She guessed that long, pointy-toed shoes would be an encumbrance for tumbling. Before Maddie could reply, Sana continued,
"You're Princess Madeline, right?"
Maddie grinned and shook her head.
"Call me Maddie," she said.
She stepped forward and offered her hand. Sana shook it briefly. Maddie noted the strength and firmness of Sana's grip, as the jongler studied her with some curiosity. Maddie was dressed in an outfit similar to Sana's, a thigh-length jerkin over tights. But the colours were more subdued, dull green and brown, as opposed to the bright diamond pattern on Sana's clothes.
"You don't look like a princess," the entertainer said.
Maddie shrugged. "I'm spending my time these days as an apprentice ranger," she explained, then added, "but that's to be kept confidential." Sana frowned.
"Oh, yes," she said. "You were the one who spoiled Diamond's little game 18 months ago, weren't you? Her curiosity was now tinged with a certain level of respect.
Maddie sighed. After she had played such a prominent role in the downfall of the Red Fox clan, she had known it would be difficult to keep her identity a complete secret, certainly not among the staff at Castle Araluen.
There were a lot of people who spoiled his game, she said. My mother was one in particular, but, as I said, we keep my role as a ranger confidential.
Sana nodded, understanding the reasoning behind the instruction.
It could be dangerous if too many people knew about Maddie's double identity.
Rangers, after all, preferred to maintain a low profile, and having people bowing and scraping to Maddie would be a continual nuisance, and one that could identify her as a member of the royal family and imperil her life.
"I'll bear it in mind," she said. Then, with the matter of Maddie's identity dealt with, she said, "Now, what can I do to help you? Malloy said I was to train you as a jungler."
"I'm going on a mission with my mentor, Will Treaty," Maddie began. She noticed Sana's eyes widen slightly at the mention of Will's name. Her teacher was a famous figure in Araluen, almost mythical, in fact, as Holt had been before him, although few people could actually claim to have seen either one of them. As a result, there were wild rumours about the two rangers. People said they were tall as giants, broad-shouldered and heavily muscled. The less educated folk of the country also said they could appear and disappear as they chose, and they were skilled in the art of magic. The truth was, while both men were heavily muscled in the arms and shoulders from long practice with their powerful war bows, they were, like most rangers, somewhat shorter than the norm. Their reputation for appearing and disappearing at will was due to their training and fieldcraft, and the use of their cloaks, which were mottled green and grey, and helped them merge into the forest background. All rangers knew that the real key to remaining unseen was to remain still, even when you were sure that an enemy had spotted you. 9 times out of 10, he hadn't. Maddie was always amused by the reactions of people who met Will for the first time. There was an air of disbelief and even disappointment.
"Can this be the mighty Will Treaty?" their expressions seemed to say. "Surely not."
"We're travelling undercover," she continued, "disguised as entertainers. Will is posing as a minstrel. He plays the mandola quite well and sings."
"What about you?" Sana asked. Maddie hesitated.
"I don't play the mandola," she said. She didn't mention the singing. She was beginning to suspect that her singing wasn't all that it might be. She was relieved when Sana didn't press the point. The young woman looked her up and down appraisingly, then walked in a small circle around her.
"You look fit enough," she said, almost to herself.
"Can you tumble?"
"I'm not sure. I..."
Sana cut her off with a brief wave of her hand.
"Try this," she ordered, setting the leather satchel she wore over her right shoulder on the floor.
Without any further preparation, she took 3 quick paces and, on the third, sprang high in the air and spun in a forward somersault, landing on both feet with barely any sound of impact and in perfect balance.
Maddie noted that the soles of her red boots were soft leather, which accounted in part for the noiseless landing. She took a deep breath, composed herself, then sprang forward, throwing herself high in the air and tucking her head under as she rolled into a somersault. She completed the movement well enough, although she was much closer to the floor than Sana had been, and her fingers brushed the floorboards. But as she landed, her weak hip gave way slightly, and she stumbled, taking 3 small paces to recover. Sana frowned. Maddie cursed under her breath. She had hoped her hip might stand up to the strain. She tapped it now.
"I've got a stiff hip," she explained.
I was hit by a javelin several years ago, and it never healed properly.
Sana chewed her lip thoughtfully.
So AC, it'll definitely be a problem for tumbling. Given time, we could probably cure it, but it'd be painful. Are you up for that?
I'm not worried about pain, Maddie said. But time is the problem. We only have a few weeks. Maybe after that I could work on freeing up the hip.
Well, a few weeks won't do it, Sana told her. We'd better look for something else. Can you juggle at all?
Two balls, Maddie said. No more than that.
Sana said nothing. Stooping to the satchel she had set on the floor, she took out two soft juggling balls and tossed them to Maddie, nodding in approval as the young ranger deftly caught both of them.
So far so good, she said. Now let's see how good you are.
Maddie set herself a ball in either hand, then began. She tossed the ball in her left hand in the air, tossed the ball in her right hand laterally to her left, then caught the first ball in her right hand. She continued, sending the two balls around in a loop. After half a dozen of these sequences, Sana held up a hand for her to stop.
All right, that's enough.
Maddie caught the last ball and waited for Sana's verdict. She thought she'd done reasonably well. Two balls only, perhaps, but not at all bad.
So what was that?
Sana asked. Maddie looked surprised.
I was juggling, she said.
But Sana shook her head. No, you were just throwing one up and passing the other across to your empty hand. That's what most people think is juggling. This is juggling. And, without any apparent effort, Sana set the two balls flying in opposing loops in the air, tossing the left-hand ball so that it flew in a circle over to her right hand, then the right-hand ball so it intersected the path of its partner, landing in her left hand. And as soon as she caught each ball, she launched it again to maintain the pattern in a 1-2-3-4 rhythm, with each ball flying high in the air and crossing over her body as it did so. After a few rounds, she stopped and cocked her head at Maddie.
Let's see if we can get you doing it like that, she said.
11.
All right, Sana said. There are a few things to remember.
She reached out and put her hands on Maddie's shoulders, squaring them off. She moved Maddie so that she was directly in front of her.
Stay nice and balanced, with your legs slightly bent and both feet evenly on the ground. Now, take a ball in each hand.
Maddie did as she was instructed, watching Sana expectantly.
Relax, Sana told her. You're tensing up. Now, bring your elbows in close to your body, with your forearms out at 90 degrees.
She waited until Maddie was positioned properly. Now toss the ball in your right hand, up and across your body, and catch it in the left hand.
Maddie obeyed. The ball smacked into her left palm.
She glanced at Sana, who nodded approval.
Good. Now toss it back to the right hand.
Maddie tossed the ball up again, but this time had to reach out to catch it, as it descended some 30 centimetres in front of her.
Sana held up a hand for her to stop.
See that, she said. You had to reach out for the ball to catch it. That means you threw it too far out in front. The balls have to stay in the same plane, just going up and down, so they land in your hand without you having to snatch at them. Try it again.
Maddie did, frowning in concentration, making sure the ball flew up vertically when she released it. It plopped easily into her catching hand this time.
Better. Do it again.
Toss, fly, plop.
Once more, the ball landed smoothly in her hand. She tossed it again, back the other way.
Good, said Sana. Keep that up.
One,
1, 2, 3, 4. Toss, catch, toss, catch.
She stopped counting the rhythm, but Maddie continued to toss and catch the ball, counting to herself under her breath.
You can count out loud if you like, Sana told her.
The seventh time Maddie launched the ball in the air, she tossed it too far to the front again and snatched at it, missing it and knocking it to the floor. She swore quietly.
Sana retrieved the ball and tossed it back to her.
She grinned sympathetically.
That's the biggest problem to overcome, she said, but you've just about got it.
Maddie began the sequence again, muttering between clenched teeth. I can see why you don't use balls that will bounce. The balls were made of leather and filled with what felt like grain of some kind.
Yes, you'd be scrambling all over the room retrieving them if they did, Sana said.
She watched Maddie throw the ball a few more times, then held up a hand for her to stop.
Fine. Your throwing is pretty consistent, although it's a little high. Try to toss it just above head height.
She handed Maddie a second ball.
All right, let's try two.
Toss the ball in your right hand, and when it reaches head height, toss the ball in your left hand to pass inside it, and toss both the same height in the air.
Maddie settled herself, preparing for this new challenge. Don't tense up, Sana told her.
The secret to juggling isn't the catching, it's the tossing. If you toss them correctly, staying in the same plane, they should land naturally in your catching hand.
Ready?
Ready, said Maddie tersely, her eyes focused on the space in front of her. And remember, if you toss it correctly, you don't have to look at it. Just let it float out there in front of you. Now, 1, 2, 3, go.
Toss, toss, catch, catch.
Excellent. Do it again.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Maddie grinned triumphantly as the second ball plopped back into her right hand, finishing the sequence.
Sana nodded approvingly.
Good. Now toss the left-hand ball first. For a moment, Maddie hesitated, adjusting her thinking to the reversal of the action. Then she complied.
1, 2, 3, 4.
The final ball fell into her left hand, and she nearly dropped it.
Do it that way again, Sana told her.
This time, she completed the sequence without nearly spilling the ball. She tried again, then again. The third time, the final ball flew too far in front of her. She snatched it out of the air, but her rhythm was spoiled and she stopped. She bit her lip in annoyance.
Stay calm, Sana instructed. You're doing well.
Except I think I've got it right, and then I throw too far out to the front, Maddie replied.
Try practicing standing close to a wall, Sana told her. That might help.
Maddie thought about the instruction and nodded. You're right. That might do it. What's next?
Sana smiled at her.
Next, I'm going to take it easy for a couple of days, while you practice until you've got it right. Then we'll add a third ball into the mix.
Couldn't we do that now? Maddie asked. I think I've almost got the two balls worked out.
Almost isn't good enough, Sana replied. You need to be completely comfortable with the two balls, so you can do it automatically, before we move on.
But, Maddie began. She was impatient to improve.
Sana held up a hand to stop her.
Gillen told me you Rangers have a saying about practice, she said.
What is it?
Most people practice till they get it right. A Ranger practices until he doesn't get it wrong.
Or she, in this case, Sana told her.
Jugglers have the same rule. Keep practicing, and I'll see you in 2 days.
Oh, all right, Maddie said. She began another sequence, but, inevitably, on the third passage, she snatched at one of the balls and dropped it. She swore quietly. Sana grinned. "See what I mean?" she said. She headed for the stairway, leaving Maddie tossing and catching, tossing and catching, her tongue protruding from her teeth. "Are you planning on poking your tongue out at the audience?" Will asked her the next day, as she practiced her toss, toss, catch, catch routine in the sitting room of their suite of rooms. "What?" she asked distractedly. He shrugged. "It's just, some people might take offence, and it's never a good idea to offend those who are paying you." Maddie nodded and withdrew her tongue inside her lips. But after a couple of tosses and catches, it slipped out again, unnoticed. Unnoticed by her, that is. Will noticed immediately. "You're doing it again," he said cheerfully. She swore under her breath. Her tongue went back in, and instantly she missed the next catch, so that the ball hit the floor and rolled under the settee. "Blast it," she said bitterly, stooping to retrieve the ball. She began the pattern again. This time she managed 8 or 9 sequences before one ball flew erratically and she dropped it again. This one rolled under an armchair and, once more, she went down on one knee to retrieve it. Will watched with some interest. "If you practiced in front of the table or the bed, you wouldn't have to crawl around the floor to retrieve them," he pointed out. "Shut up," Maddie said tersely, her eyes flicking back and forth to follow the flight of the balls. This time, she completed over a dozen sequences before she snatched at a ball and dropped it, sending it rolling across the floor. Sighing, she retrieved it and moved to the dining table to practice. This time, she completed 15 patterns before dropping a ball. But this time, the ball landed on the table, rolled once, and came to a halt. She retrieved it easily. "Told you so," Will said. She drew in breath to make a pithy reply, then realized he had been right and said nothing. "Toss, toss, catch, catch," she continued. Will watched for a while, then realized there was no further need for comment. Her tongue was withdrawn, and she kept the boards rotating evenly, without dropping any. He went back to reading a report about pirate activities on Araluen's northwest coast. 12. Sana reviewed Maddie's progress the following morning, and nodded approvingly. "Good work," she said. "Let's add the third ball, and we're underway." She handed Maddie another ball, placing it in Maddie's right hand, so that she held 2 balls there and 1 in her left. "Okay, here's the sequence. Toss with your right hand. Toss with your left hand. Catch with your left hand. Toss with your right hand. Catch with your left hand." Maddie frowned. "Say that again?" she requested, and Sana repeated the sequence. "Like this," she said, and demonstrated. With the extra ball in play, the sequence now became toss, catch, toss, catch, toss, catch. Maddie tried it, and instantly felt as if she was back to square one. The smooth rhythm she had built up with 2 balls deserted her, and balls flew erratically, causing her to snatch at them and drop them. "I'll never get this," she said bitterly. Sana smiled at her. "Of course you will. It just needs practice. Start again." Maddie did so, and, after a few muffed sequences, the pattern clicked, and she had the balls rotating smoothly. She smiled in triumph and promptly dropped one. Sana stooped and retrieved it for her, handing it back to her. "See, I told you," she said. Maddie scowled.
Yes, but I dropped one that last time. Her instructor shrugged.
Maybe. But you didn't drop one the previous four times. That's progress.
If you say.
I do. All you have to do now is practice that three-ball sequence for a couple of days, and you'll have it. But for now, let's try something different.
Gladly, Maddie said.
She put the balls away in her jerkin pocket and followed Sana to the end of the practice hall. For the first time, she noticed that there was a head-high object there, covered with a thick linen cloth.
Sana pulled the cloth away and revealed a large round board, shaped in a circle, and with 12 numbered segments marked on it.
It looked like a giant version of the target boards Maddie had seen the castle garrison throwing small darts at when they were relaxing. From her ever-present satchel, Sana produced a canvas tool wrap. Unrolling it on a side table, she revealed 5 identical knives. Simple in design, each one consisted of a wooden handle riveted to a straight steel blade that tapered to a double-edged point. There were no cross pieces and no fancy decoration on the hilts. She passed one to Maddie, who tested its weight and balance. In spite of the simple, almost primitive design, she found the knife was perfectly balanced and weighted. Transferring the knife to her left hand, she reached for another and tested it. It felt identical to the first. She raised her eyebrows.
"These are good," she said, passing them back and forth from right hand to left, testing them further.
Sana smiled. "Thank you," she said. "I made them myself."
"They're almost identical," Maddie said, studying the two simple blades, holding them alongside each other to measure each against its companion.
"Not almost," Sana corrected her.
"They are identical. Weight and balance for each one is exactly the same as the other."
She indicated the round target, nearly 6 metres away.
"Try one," she said.
Maddie paused, testing the heft and balance of the knife for a second, then threw with a deceptively casual action. The knife caught the early morning sun streaming through the tall windows as it spun across the room, then thunked solidly into the target, a few centimetres to the left of the junction point of the 12 numbered segments. The knife had spun past the central point on its final spin, and the hilt was angled at about 20 degrees higher than the blade.
Sana looked at her, a small moue of surprise on her features.
"Pretty good," she said.
"Try another one."
But before Maddie could comply, she held out a hand to stop her. "Aim for a different part of the board," she said. "If you hit that first knife, and there's every chance you might, you could split some of the wood off the hilt. Then I'll have to rebalance it."
Maddie nodded and spun the second knife into the widest part of the number one segment at the top of the target. Another solid thunk, and the knife was quivering in the wood. Without commenting, Sana handed her a third knife. This one, Maddie placed in the number 9 segment.
"Can you throw underarm?" Sana asked, handing her a fourth knife. Without replying, Maddie spun the knife underarm into the number 3 segment, opposite her previous throw.
"And round arm," Sana said, passing across the final knife.
Maddie hurled it in a sideways throw, placing it a centimetre from the first knife in the centre of the board.
Sana frowned.
"I told you not to throw near the other knife," she said.
Maddie shrugged and grinned.
"I've got the feel for them now," she said. "I knew I wouldn't hit it."
Sana went to reply, then looked at the neat placement of the 5 knives in the target and realised Maddie wasn't boasting, but speaking the truth. Well, perhaps she was boasting just a little, but she obviously knew what she was doing when it came to throwing knives.
"So you see,"
Sana said eventually, then moved forward to retrieve the knives from the board.
Well, she continued, I can see that I don't need to teach you how to throw a knife, but I can teach you a little show business to go along with it.
Show business? Maddie asked. For the past 3.5 years, knife throwing had been a serious business for her, with no room for fancy throwing and showing off.
Sana nodded. Throwing a knife well is good, she said, but the audience has to see some element of risk in it if they're going to be entertained.
Risk is entertaining? Maddie asked. The performer smiled indulgently.
Of course it is. People love to be frightened, she said.
She moved up to the target and wheeled a new apparatus from behind it. It was a pulley wheel and crank handle, with a leather belt running from the pulley. She looped the belt over a matching pulley at the back of the target board, flicked off a retaining strap, and pulled the cranking apparatus until the leather belt was taut. She gave a few experimental tugs on the crank handle, and the target board turned slowly in time with the crank. The two pulleys were different sizes, so that the wheel turned at twice the speed as the pulley Sana was cranking.
Hit number 5, she said suddenly, catching Maddie by surprise.
Hurriedly, the range appeared at the turning target wheel and located the number 5 segment. She took a few seconds to assess the speed at which the wheel was turning and threw, aiming off to allow for the fact that the numbered segment would have moved in the time it took for the knife to reach the target.
Thunk!
The knife thudded into the nominated segment on the outer edge of the wheel. It wasn't quite central, but Sana nodded approval.
Excellent, she said. Now hit number 11.
She continued turning the crank, keeping the target board rotating at a constant speed. Familiar with the movement now, Maddie threw without the same delay. This time, the knife hit the outer edge of the 11 segment, exactly in the centre.
Good work, Sana called,
a little short of breath from the effort of keeping the heavy board turning. And number 3. Maddie was ready with another knife. Her eyes narrowed as she sought the number 3, assessed the trajectory she would need, and threw.
Thunk!
Once again, it was a perfect throw.
This time, halfway into the centre, number 7.
The target was narrower now as the segments tapered down the closer they were to the centre of the board. Maddie took a second to assess the new conditions, then hurled another knife, spinning and catching the sunlight, to thud into the board at the nominated point. Sana stood up from the crank and let the board slow down and eventually come to a stop. She grinned at Maddie.
You're better at this than juggling.
Maddie shrugged. I've thrown a lot of knives over the past 3 years, she said. We have to practice with knives that aren't balanced like these, so we can throw any type of knife. Sana indicated the two knives at Maddie's belt.
But your own knives are balanced for throwing, she said.
The apprentice ranger nodded. They are, although not as well as these. She pointed to the knives Sana had brought to the session.
These are excellent.
Sana nodded in recognition of the compliment.
They have to be, she said.
There's one thing, Maddie said. You said you were going to add an element of risk. There's no risk in simply hitting a rotating target.
The juggler smiled.
There is, when there's a person strapped to it, she said.
13.
At Sana's invitation, Maddie stepped forward to study the target board once more. Looking closely, she could see there were two handholds at the 9 and 3 positions, and gaps in the board at the 5 and 7 positions.
You place one of the audience on the board, explained Sana. They hold on to the hand grips, and you pass leather straps through the gaps here to fasten their feet to the board. Then you have someone turn the crank, and you have a live target spinning slowly on the board. The object, of course, is to miss them, but to do it with the smallest possible margin.
Of course, said Maddie, eyeing the handles and strap holes.
I guess the trick is to aim to hit them when they're at a certain point, knowing the rotation of the board will take them away from the spot you're aiming at. As long as the person on the crank keeps turning at a constant rate. So I'd advise you to use your master for that task, not a volunteer from the audience.
Yes. I don't think I'd be wise to rely on someone who's been drinking for several hours,
Maddie replied. And don't make the target anyone too important, just in case.
I can see that might be unwise, Maddie said thoughtfully.
So, what's next?
Practice, Sana told her. Practice your juggling so you can get those three balls flying without dropping them. And practice throwing with the wheel turning. Get one of the castle servants to crank it for you. Or ask Will if he's got the time. It'll be good to get him used to the apparatus.
You won't be with me? Maddie asked.
Sana shook her head. You don't need me anymore. I've shown you all you need to know. Now you need a week or so to get the movements right, particularly the juggling. I'll check back in a week to see how you've progressed. My guess is you'll be ready to go. Your juggling won't be anything spectacular, but it'll be adequate. And your knife throwing will compensate for that.
I'm not going to have to juggle those knives, am I? Maddie asked anxiously. She envisioned those gleaming knives spinning in the air in front of her. It was not a comforting image.
Sana smiled. I don't think you'll have time to perfect that. We'll keep the juggling to the balls.
She patted the young ranger on the shoulder encouragingly.
Don't worry, you'll be fine. You've got a lot of natural talent, and you're already a perfectly competent knife thrower. We just have to add a bit of show business to that.
And avoid actually hitting anyone with one of the knives, Maddie said.
Sana nodded. That would be ideal, yes, she said.
Then, gathering her leather satchel and slinging it over her shoulder, she prepared to leave.
I'll check you out in a week, she said. In the meantime, if there's anything that's bothering you, feel free to send for me and ask me.
There's a lot that's bothering me, Maddie said, remembering how the juggling balls tended to spill from her hands as if they had a life of their own. But I'm not sure if just asking will fix it.
Sana grinned, knowing what she meant.
I know the juggling seems well nigh impossible at the moment, she said, but you'll be surprised how quickly you improve.
I certainly hope so, Maddie replied.
The week passed quickly, with Maddie applying herself to the two disciplines of juggling and knife throwing. Her life as a ranger had left her well accustomed to practicing and perfecting new physical skills. She alternated between the two, ensuring that she spent sufficient time on each to ensure improvement, without becoming stale. Will watched her approvingly, seeing her ability improving as each day went by. In the evenings, she put the knives and juggling balls away and gave herself a complete break from the work, so that the following morning she could approach it totally refreshed. After 2 days, she had a life-size dummy made and strapped to the board, and co-opted two sturdy servants to crank the handle and make it rotate. She counted time for them, ensuring that they didn't go too fast or too slow, but turned the wheel and the dummy at a constant speed, as the knives thudded into the target board. The servants watched with some degree of awe. They were impressed by her knife-throwing skills, but when she asked if either of them wanted to take a turn strapped to the wheel, they hastily declined. She grinned,
and didn't press the matter. Her juggling was improving rapidly. She was sending the three balls swooping through the air with great aplomb, and only ever dropped one on rare occasions, usually when she was interrupted or distracted. She became so confident, in fact, that she decided she'd try juggling three of the throwing knives, reasoning that it would make a dramatic beginning to her knife-throwing act. But knives were a lot more daunting than balls. She spent 10 minutes accustoming herself to the feeling of tossing a knife in the air, so that it rotated once, landing hilt first in her catching hand. All the time, she was conscious of the sharp point as it spun slowly in the air. Eventually, she became proficient with one knife and moved on to two, as she had with the juggling balls. But the minute the two sharp points were spinning in the air, she panicked and skipped away with a startled yelp, letting them thud point down into the floor of the practice room. "I'll leave the juggling to the balls," she muttered, as she pried the knives loose, studying the two new gashes in the floorboards that she'd have to smooth over. Will, meanwhile, had his own work cut out. He needed to learn a new repertoire of songs, particularly those that were popular on the continent. Fortunately, there was a lot of traffic back and forth between Araluen and Gallagher so far as entertainers were concerned, and a protégé of Molloy's had only recently returned from a tour of Gallagher and Iberian, and was able to show Will some of the newer and more popular tunes. In addition, he was supervising work on their transport, a small, gaily painted and decorated cart that would carry their equipment as they travelled, and provide shelter for those times when they might need to camp on the road. It was a short, high-sided cart, capable of being pulled by one horse, either tug or bumper. The cart had a high canvas top, held erect by three bent steel hoops set into the sides. Once Maddie's throwing board and crank handle were loaded, there would be room for her to sleep inside the cart, under cover. Not a lot of room, mind you, but room nonetheless. "What about you?" Maddie asked. Will shrugged. "I could sleep on the ground, under the cart," he said. "I've had worse beds." Maddie had been about to offer to alternate with him, but then decided that, if he felt that way, he could stay under the cart. He saw the momentary hesitation and turned away, smiling. She was learning fast, he thought. Sanna returned, as she had promised, on the 7th day, and assessed Maddie's progress. She nodded in satisfaction as the young girl sent the balls spinning in a smooth cascade. "You've come a long way," she said, then gestured to the target board in the corner. "Have you tried this with a live subject yet?" "Not so far," Maddie admitted. "I've been using that dummy." She indicated the burlap sack with rough arms and legs attached, all stuffed with straw. Sanna examined it, noting the lack of tears or holes in the burlap. "Nothing like practicing with the real thing," she said. "It adds that necessary frisson of danger." Maddie grinned. "Are you volunteering?" Sanna backed away hurriedly. "Not me," she said. "I don't get paid enough for that." Her gaze lit on Will, who was standing by, watching with interest. He saw her appraising him and held up his hands in protest. "Not me either," he said. "I'm a valuable officer in His Majesty's forces." "And yet, you were the one who taught her how to throw a knife?" Sanna challenged. "Well, yes, but not at me," he pointed out. "Come on, Will," Maddie wheedled. "Don't you trust me?" "Neither one of us wants to hear the answer to that," he said. But he began to move toward the target board, albeit reluctantly. Grinning broadly, Sanna adjusted the board so that it was upright. Will stepped up onto the foot stirrups and took a firm hold of the hand grips. The two women quickly strapped him in, with straps on both hands and feet, so that he was secure. Sanna held up a hand as Maddie reached for the first knife. "Not yet," she said. "I want you to see something." She wound the crank until Will was head down, then stopped. "See how he's dropped a little on the board?" she said. "There's always some slack in the straps, and you have to allow for that." "She can see," Will said, upside down and somewhat red in the face as a consequence. "Now can we keep moving?" Sanna laughed softly and began cranking again. "Set the rhythm," she told Maddie, and the young ranger began to count time. After a slight hesitation, she threw the first knife, sending it thudding into the board a few centimetres from Will's left armpit. "Good," said Sanna. "Did you mean it to be that close?" "Pretty much," Maddie replied. Will, his voice alternately straining and relaxing as he rotated, asked a question. "How close was she?" Sanna looked at him in mild surprise. "You didn't see?" "Can't see with my eyes closed," Will replied. 14. They left Castle Araluen 4 days later. The little cart, festooned at all four corners with red, yellow and green flags that fluttered gaily in the wind, rolled smoothly along, with Tug between the shafts. Bumper trotted obediently beside his older companion, the two of them tossing their heads and shaking their manes in companionable conversation as they went. Although neither horse had been bred as a cart horse, both had the necessary nuggety strength and endurance to pull the cart easily. It was light in weight and not heavily laden. The knife-throwing target was the bulkiest piece of equipment they carried, and usually either Maddie or Will walked beside the cart to lighten the load still further. "Sorry about this," Will had told his horse as he guided Tug between the shafts. He sensed there was a certain indignity involved in pulling a cart. But Tug was a ranger horse, and he understood the necessity for going undercover. They could have used a cart horse, of course, with the two